How space tech finds its way down to Earth. From American Public Media, it's Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. Right now, rescuers in Mexico City are using portable radar instruments to listen for human heartbeats underneath the rubble after Mexico City's 7.1 magnitude earthquake earlier this week. That radar technology was originally developed by NASA and licensed to private companies. See, when President Dwight Eisenhower created NASA back in the 50s during the Cold War, he wanted NASA science to improve our lives.
The peaceful contributions of science to healing, to enriching life, to freeing the spirit, these are the most important products of the conquest of nature's secrets.
Nature's secrets. And today, NASA has a spin-off division. Dan Lochne is head of that division, called the Technology Transfer Program.
Yeah, we've been doing this for a long time. And some of the uses that we find for our technology are fairly straightforward and expected. But some other things are a little more unexpected, like the camera in your cell phone is actually a NASA invention. We've got the current patents. I think one of my favorites, though, is the shiny Mylar blankets that were developed in the 1970s. You've seen them repackaged as space blankets, but you also find them at the end of marathons. And the greatest part about getting wrapped in one of those blankets at the end of a long race is you can finally stop running. Oh, my space blanket. You can finally stop.
Does anybody ever say no? I mean, have you ever approached a company and said, hey, I have this technology and I think it could really be great for you? And they said, I don't think so.
Absolutely. Very recently, actually. We're designing a giant rocket, and we ran into a problem in the design phase where this rocket was vibrating and shaking on the launch pad. So we developed a device and a system that captures the mass of liquid fuel in the rocket, and it's a simple system that controls that weight and then prevents the vibration. So we're looking at this tall structure, and who else has tall stuff and they don't want it shaking? Buildings. So we went to some significant big design firms and architecture firms, and that industry is very mature, very risk-averse also. So we were told no several times, but we were told yes once, and that's kind of all you need. And we licensed it to a company called Thornton Tomasetti, and the building was just commissioned this last year. It's the tallest building in Brooklyn. It's the B2 apartment building.
Would some version of these technologies come into being even without NASA?
So that's a tough one to answer, if only because they do exist because of NASA. So yeah, sure, maybe some of these devices and components would have been developed without the rigors of space travel. Some obviously wouldn't. A lot of the aerospace advances and the technologies for living in space, for example. But some of these non-aerospace applications or secondary applications, you probably don't need the rigors of space flight. You don't need to build a spaceship first before you build a heart implantable heart device. That's a really roundabout way of solving a problem. And if you have to build a spaceship before you tackle any problem, you're not doing it right. On the other hand, because we are tackling these challenges and doing things that have never been done before, and we are developing these inventions in the process of that work, it is a moral imperative, we believe, to reuse and to make sure that we extract as much value from this taxpayer investment as possible.
Plus, it just seems like your job is really cool. I mean, you just get look at these technologies and think about them and then think, you know, this would be amazing for Jell-O, you know, like a next generation Jell-O recipe. I mean, like, how creative do you get to be when you guys are sitting around thinking, what could the application be here?
We are not as creative as the general public can be. We don't understand everyone's problems, and we don't know what kind of off-the-wall solutions people might come up with for use of our technology. And we come up with as many as we can, but we like working with groups of students. We like putting the technologies out for everyone to take a look at, and we get some interesting proposals that we would have never even dreamed of. But I do have a kind of a hard time when I go visit the labs and talk to the individual scientists and inventors, because they'll explain. So we developed this cool technology, and it does this wonderful thing to advance space flight, and we've solved this great technical challenge, and they're so proud. And my first question is, yeah, what else can it do?
Do you have a favorite scene? Do you have a favorite scene from any space movie or television show that you thought, all right, this they got it right?
This is the worst part. I don't care for science fiction or fantasy, and I haven't seen the six most recent Star Wars movies, and I'm one of the few people at NASA, I believe, who isn't fueled by this inherent interest in space.
Really? Did you even see The Martian?
No. I get more excited when I hear that a marching band in a cold area is using a heating element that we developed for their mouthpieces for their instruments, because the instrument metal and the mouthpiece metals expand and contract at different rates in the changing temperatures when they're performing outside. I get more interested in knowing that we used a technology that's helping marching bands in that specific environment than I do even remembering why we developed that component in the first place.
It is perfect that you are, in fact, a down-to-earth guy.
That's my role.
That's Dan Lochne from the Technology Transfer Program. Now, I should note here that Dan isn't totally without space whimsy. He's got two dogs, and they are named Astro and Cosmo. And this whole interview actually reminded me of another really interesting interview I did. It was about a book called Combat Ready Kitchen by Anastasia Marx de Salcedo. And it was all about how the military influences the food we eat, up to and including production, and about how there's this division called the Combat Feeding Directorate, which is all about technology transfer of food into the consumer sector. And Anastasia gave me this incredible example about how this started as far back as World War II.
Cheese powder. And that came about from World War II, when the government was looking for ways to reduce the weight and volume of food, of the enormous amount of food that it was shipping overseas to feed troops. After the end of the war, a whole little industry had sprung up to support this dehydrated cheese, and they needed a market. And that market ended up being the grocery manufacturers such as Kraft and Frito-Lay and Nabisco. And one of the very first products to use this cheese powder was the Cheeto.
You can find that whole interview at marketplace.org because, like I said, this is also a technology transfer story. All of this research and tech is passed on to the consumer sector, partly because then the food production could quickly and easily convert to a wartime production, including converting manufacturing lines to producing rations. It was fascinating. Hey, if you're a fan of this podcast, would you do me just a quick solid? Could you go give us a review over at Apple Podcasts? It makes a huge difference in our rankings, and I actually really want to know what you think. Speaking of which, yesterday's show talked all about Facebook, and there was news over the weekend that President Obama personally tried to intervene with Mark Zuckerberg over misinformation on Facebook, and the company reportedly knew there was some kind of Russian hacker activity and dozens of fake accounts being set up as far back as June of 2016. So here's what I'm wondering. Knowing what we are starting to know about Facebook's power and reach, would you ever consider quitting Facebook? Email me your thoughts at mwood@marketplace.org, or better yet, record them on your phone's voice memo app and send it that way, because we love to play you on the show. You can also tweet me at Molly Wood. I am Molly Wood, and that is Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.